Do you swear on the Constitution of the United States to tell the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth, so help you God?
This is Police Radio,
the voice of American law enforcement,
with your host, Randy Sutton.
Hello, and welcome to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on the America Out Loud Network. I'm your host, Randy Sutton. On this show, we talk about all things about law enforcement. We talk about the positives, we talk about the negatives. We don't hold back, and we always have a very interesting guest on as well. This week, we are going to talk to a renowned doctor who will enlighten us in a very dramatic fashion about PTSD and about how law enforcement is affected so greatly by this disease. But before we do that, let's take a walk into the briefing room, where I'm going to give you my view from the blue.
The briefing room, headlines, stories, and all that touches American law enforcement.
Lots of stuff to talk about today on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. I want to talk about some positives. You know, usually there's so much negative stuff going on, and I focus on that because it drives me crazy. But there's some really there's some good stories. When I say good, showing the heroism, showing the dedication of the American law enforcement officer. So there's a couple stories that I want to highlight. One is I'm going to read this to you verbatim. This came off of a Facebook post that was posted by the Tacoma, Washington Police Department. And then we're going to talk about it afterwards. Tacoma Police Officer Aaron McNeely was on vacation in Las Vegas, Nevada, when one of America's worst mass shootings occurred at the Mandalay Bay Resort. Officer McNeely was not attending a concert there, but ran toward the venue when he heard the gunfire. As victims streamed out, he ran in and immediately found a woman lying on the ground, shot twice in the back and bleeding profusely. He used his shirt to plug her wounds, instructed her friends to apply pressure, and then ran 200 yards to an ambulance. With the paramedics' permission, he drove the ambulance back to the woman and loaded her inside, where she received life-saving medical attention. He then took up a position at a checkpoint nearest the hotel to ensure the shooter did not escape with the people fleeing the venue. At one point, grabbing a Las Vegas Metro Police traffic vest and falling in line with a local SWAT team as they responded to the scene. For his extraordinary act of bravery and heroism, Officer Aaron McNeely has just been awarded the Tacoma Police Department Medal of Valor. Thank you, Officer McNeely, for embodying this department's core values, and you're an asset to the city of Tacoma. You know, first of all, let's talk about this officer, Aaron McNeely. What it took for him to literally run to the sound of the guns, which is the warrior spirit embodiment, if I have ever heard of it. And this officer did exactly that. He could have done just the opposite when he heard the gunfire, done what most people did, and that was flee the area. Instead, he ran towards it, and he jumped into action. He saved this woman's life. He took extraordinary action. And so for him, I want to say a personal thank you to Tacoma Police Officer Aaron McNeely. He literally is when you think about what it takes to be a great cop, he's got it. So that's one thing. The other thing I want to talk about is I want to congratulate the Tacoma Police leadership. Now, you know, if you have listened to this broadcast or read my postings on Facebook, you know that I am highly critical of many of law enforcement leadership positions, because there has been such a almost a selling out of the American law enforcement officer by their leadership in small towns and big cities across the United States. But there is also fantastic police leadership. And I don't want to just concentrate and bring up all the negative stuff when this leadership of Tacoma PD recognized this officer. That's very important. And why is that important? Because, you know, cops don't get, they're not getting raises. They're not getting bonuses. When a guy does a great job or a woman does a great job, all they're looking for is some acknowledgement that their bosses understand it and appreciate it. And that's why it's so important for police leadership to learn that lesson. And for the Tacoma Police Department's leadership, a kudo to you as well. Now, this officer was not the only brave officer that I want to talk about this week. There was also an off-duty police officer. And this officer was in Dallas, Texas. This guy is off duty, okay? He's off duty. And it's early in the morning, like, you know, early morning hours. And he is going into a Whataburger. A Whataburger is, of course, a fast food restaurant. And he sees an armed robbery in progress, two armed suspects. Now, this off-duty officer, first of all, had the warrior mindset by making sure that he was armed even though he was off duty, which is something that I advocate strongly for off duty officers and retired officers. This officer was armed and he took action. And when I say he took action, I mean he took action. He engaged both of those suspects, even though he is outnumbered. He took them both and he shot them both and he took care of business. Now, this is a Dallas police officer. They didn't identify him. Otherwise I'd identify him by name and say thank you. Now the Dallas Police Department is got a serious leadership issues. They can't keep their cops because their pay sucks and their leadership is like, as I discussed before, their city leadership does not appreciate their cops. They're very low paid in comparison to the area, and they are very, very liberal and do not appreciate their police officers. So this officer deserves the Medal of Valor. And I will be watching to see if they give it to him. You know, so here's how jaded cops have become all over the United States. I posted this on Facebook. And by the way, if you don't follow me on Facebook, you need to. Go to Randy Sutton, Public Figure. Like it, follow it, and you can see my postings every single day. I posted the story about this officer. And I recommended that, you know, the leadership of Dallas PD give him the Medal of Valor for his actions. And you'll have no idea the number of email responses or postings that I got on that Facebook post from cops from all over the country saying, yeah, they'll probably bring him up on charges. And you know what's, I really shouldn't laugh because I've seen that happen before. In fact, we had it happen right here in Las Vegas. An off-duty detective was in a veterinarian's office, and an armed robbery took place. He engaged the suspect, and the department brought him up on charges for some off-duty conduct. And I got to tell you, that's leadership at its worst. So let's hope that the Dallas PD does the right thing. Once again, another amazing act of bravery and heroism by a police officer off duty. Now, while we're on the topic of bravery and my strong advocacy for arming yourself, whether you are active duty and off duty, or if you are retired, the law changed under George Bush, thankfully, and that law gave retired law enforcement officers the right to carry their weapons concealed in every single state in the union. It's called the Law Enforcement Officer Safety Act. So that puts a lot of good guys with guns out on the street. And an event happened here in Colorado a few days ago, which demonstrate why that is so important and why it saves lives. So a retired police officer who was camping, he and his wife are in a campground, and this subject drives into the campground. Now, this guy had already shot at a whole bunch of people, but the retired officer didn't know this. So this guy had already shot at a whole bunch of people. He literally committed a one-man crime spree. Then he somehow drives into this campground and started yelling, and then demanded access to the retired officer's campsite while he was brandishing his gun, and he demanded that the retired officer bring him water and food. Well, instead, the officer grabbed his AR-15 and took care of business. Shot the suspect, didn't kill him, but shot him up real good and held him for the responding police officers. So this is, I just think it's so vitally important that we talk about the bravery and the heroism of the law enforcement community. You know, we're constantly seeing negativity directed towards them. And so I think that it is so important that we talk about the bravery, which I can assure you happens a whole lot more often than the acts that are depicted on social media and in the media itself. So in fact, I want to talk about a couple of those events right now. This narrative that goes out where a police use of force is videotaped, and then a few seconds of that videotape are released, and then a narrative attached to it. Well, it took place twice this week. And once again, the social justice warriors, the media, jumped all over it, made it look very negative towards law enforcement, and it was nonsense. Okay, so one of them happened in El Paso, and the headline was, "Police officer pulls gun on children." Well, you can't really incite something better than that, right? Police officer pulls gun on children. And then it showed this El Paso police officer in a confrontation with, he's trying to hold the suspect down, and he is literally being swarmed by a group of kids who ran the ages from 12 to maybe 18 or 19. And a woman is screeching at the cop, and they're calling him all kinds of names. And suddenly the officer pulls his weapon. You can see he looks behind him, and he orders people back. And then within a couple seconds, he holsters his weapon. Now it went viral, right? People lost their minds. And I did some digging into this. This officer had responded to a crime in progress, burglary / criminal trespass. He confronted a suspect. The suspect resisted. He was trying to hold him down while he was waiting for his backup. And then he gets swarmed. And these aren't just kids. These are all a bunch of gangbangers. They're all part of a gang in the neighborhood. And they're threatening him. They're screaming at him. They're darting towards him. And let me tell you, if you think that a 12-year-old and a 14-year-old can't and aren't capable of killing people, you're way wrong. You're living in a different alternative reality. There's a lot of dangerous kids out there, and they'll pull a trigger on a cop in a heartbeat if it gets them gang recognition. So this officer perceived some danger. He reacted to it. He had reassessed and he holstered his weapon. Nothing that this officer did was improper, was out of line, and yet the media lost their minds. But here's something interesting. It was televised on the local news. The entire tape was televised in El Paso. And if you read the comments from the people in El Paso, they were highly supportive of this police officer. It was the people from California and New York and other places from around the country who were calling for this officer's head. So it shows you that the people who this type of criminal activity is, are victimized by, they understood what this officer was going through. And it was the snowflakes that vilified this officer and called for his head. The El Paso police said they are conducting an investigation, and that's pretty much it. So that shows you one of the things that took place this week. And then in Philadelphia, a similar situation. And I mean, the media took a little snippet of a bunch of uncooperative kids, teenagers, who were allegedly selling water in order to support their football team. That's what they were telling people, right? Well, it turned out they're all a bunch of liars and scammers. They weren't on any football team. They were there to rip off people, and they have had, and it took place at the Philadelphia Zoo, and they had had problem after problem after problem. They trespassed this group, and then when the police were called, somebody took some videotape of it while they were engaging in their failure to comply, which is the norm anymore. And it became a racist issue, with the Black Lives Matter screaming for an investigation. The cops did nothing wrong. This is all about the conduct of a bunch of punks who are just always aware of the optics of a situation, trying to take advantage of it, and then screaming racism. So, this is taking place all over the country. These type of incidents can really, really spiral out of control and cause major strife. And it really depends on the leadership of these cities and police departments to bring the truth out and defend their police officers. And that, my friends, is my view from the blue. I want to share a little something personal with you, and also something that I have a great deal of pride in. And what I'm talking about is my new book, The Power of Legacy, Personal Heroes of America's Most Inspiring People, is now ready for pre-order from Amazon.com. I got to tell you a little bit something about that book, why I did it. Many of you who follow me know that my past history, but there's some things you might not know. And the reason I retired from policing with the Las Vegas Metropolitan Police Department is because I suffered a stroke in my police car. And the subsequent medical diagnosis was, let's say, grim. And at that time, I started thinking about my legacy and what would I be remembered for. And I happened to be watching an interview with an incredible man named Frank Jankowitz, the man who created the Make-A-Wish Foundation, when he was an Arizona trooper. And I saw this interview and said, I've got it. I want to meet him and talk to people like him about who their personal heroes were that inspired them to do the amazing works that they do for others. So I traveled the country and I talked to incredible people like Frank, like Gary Sinise, like people right in your backyard who you might not even know, but who have touched the lives of so many people. That book changed my life. I think if you read it, it might change yours as well. It is a realization that heroes are among us, and everyone can become a personal hero. So if you would, check it out on Amazon.com. Look up The Power of Legacy, or just look up my name. And I would love for you to read it, and I would love for you to review it. So check it out, Amazon.com, The Power of Legacy, and I think you'll really enjoy it. Yeah, if you're a police officer, or if you are a spouse or a family member, one of the things that is very necessary to help save lives are the ballistic vests and the body armor that police officers wear. The problem with that is that they're uncomfortable. They're hot. especially in the summertime. They get wet, they get sweaty, they get nasty, and it's just, it's part of the deal. I mean, you gotta wash them, you gotta take care of them, and that's one of the problems with having a ballistic vest. There is a new product, and I kind of like it. They call it StinkyVest.com. That's the company, and they arrest odors. I love it, and this is really good stuff. And it's not, you don't have to just use it for vests. It's good for all kinds of odors, hampers, the whole bit. And it's really effective stuff. It won't harm your skin. It's really a necessity. If you wear ballistic body armor, or if you want to use it for just home use, this is some really good stuff. And if it's only available at StinkyVest.com, go take a look at it. It's put out by a law enforcement organization, and it eliminates odors without harmful chemicals, pet odors, the whole bit. So check it out. That's StinkyVest.com, and you can contact them, see their products, and it is worthwhile.
The goal is to deliver a message of truth, inspiration, and hope to the world, to unite people from all backgrounds and beliefs in an effort to advance humanity. News blogs, informative podcasts, and entertaining videos. It's AmericaOutloud.com, where the conversation never ends. With 24/7 streaming on our free apps on both Android and Apple. Welcome to the new era in communications, America Out Loud Talk Radio.
Think back to the last time you felt healthy and energized. The best times of our lives occur when we're at the peak of our health, sleeping better, full of energy and focus. We know that fades with age, and you might be feeling the effects of aging as low energy and poor sleep. But it doesn't have to be that way. There haven't been any nutrition systems designed to rejuvenate our bodies as we get older, until now. Healthy Cell Pro is the only multi-nutrient system that impacts the building block of your body, the cell. Created by anti-aging expert and Nobel Prize nominee, Dr. Vincent Giampapa, award-winning Healthy Cell Pro cuts through the complexity of nutrition supplements by simply giving you the purest ingredients, filling dietary gaps to nourish your cells and enhance your quality of life for optimal performance. Visit HealthyCell.com and use code OUTLOUD for an exclusive discount, or call 844-869-9958.
I have a very special guest with me in the interview room of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement. It's Dr. Alex Kahana. He has an astounding bio and history. He is a partner and head of medical advisory at Crypto Oracle. But really the reason he's here today is because he works with state and federal agencies on policies to improve pain management, but he works for veterans organizations and also for SafeCallNow.org, which is a fantastic law enforcement or first responder organizations, which helps individuals in the first responder field, police, fire, etc., with their addiction issues. And Dr. Kahana, thank you so much for taking the time to be on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you. Thank you so much. It's a pleasure to be here.
You know, the reason that you're, I know you got to be awfully busy these days, considering the emphasis on the opioid crisis in the United States and how it affects not just citizens, but how it has severely impacted law enforcement as well. How did you get into this field?
Well, it depends how far back I want to go. My background, I was born in Israel, and any Israeli stayed too long in the military. All in all, I was almost 16 years in special forces. So I say that because I have almost kind of embedded in my DNA this whole idea of being mission-driven and data-driven and working on a need-to-know basis and teamwork and recognizing that none of us is as good as all of us. And and after serving, I really wanted to. I saw pain in the battlefield, and I really wanted to dedicate my life to relieving pain, because I sense that what really pain does is it robs you from your dignity. I can't even start counting the amount of patients that I saw throughout my medical career that would look at me and say, you know, doc, a couple of weeks ago I was just like you. And so don't be mistaken to think that I was always like this. And, you know, seeing what pain and human suffering does to us, I decided really to have a full academic career in pain medicine. And I was very fortunate to build multiple pain centers in Israel. I was also almost a decade in Switzerland. And I was recruited to Seattle, to the University of Washington, back in 2008 to run their pain division. And I have to admit that that is the zenith of my career, because you might not know this, but the first pain clinic in the world back in 1959, actually, was in Seattle. It is the Professor John Bonica, who was also a serviceman. He also started the multidisciplinary pain clinic at the University of Washington. So it was fantastic.
That's a little bit of trivia I didn't know.
Yeah. And so being part of that history and you know, surrounded by just wonderful providers who were dedicating their life day in, day out to treat patients anywhere from the couple of months old to the end of life, cancer, non-cancer, after surgery, disease, injury, both civilians, service members, veterans. We would see everyone with chronic non-relenting pain. And that's where I met Sean Riley from Safe Call Now. And, you know, we immediately hit it off and really dedicated ourselves to do God's work in that sense.
That's fantastic. For my listeners who do not know it, I actually sit on the board of directors of Safe Call Now. So this is a particularly important topic for me, because I have seen the effects of addiction with many of my brother and sister law enforcement officers, and know the struggle that they're dealing with. And so, Dr. Kahan, I can't thank you enough for your work and what you do for the men and women in law enforcement, especially when it comes down to pain management and the addiction crisis. I know that you have developed some pretty groundbreaking treatments. Can you discuss some of those?
Sure. I think that the first treatment actually that I would say would be groundbreaking is actually the most simplest of all, and that is to start talking to people, actually understanding what is going on. And I came with this idea when I joined the University of Washington, and I asked my faculty, you know, how are your folks, how are your patients doing? And they said, fine. And I said, how do you know? And they said, well, we don't have any complaints. I said, well, that's good. That's a good metric. But how do you know? And clearly the idea was that there was no systematic way to really document patient-reported outcomes. And this is, I'm talking to you back in 2008. This is before cloud computing, mobile was in its infancy. The whole idea of actually having patients sit in front of a computer and answer a battery of questions, and that those questions are registered and reported to healthcare professionals in a way that they can look at the information and know what's going on prior to the visit, that was really groundbreaking. And I have to admit also, it was a cultural shift that not everybody was happy, and they're saying, oh, this will never work, and we need to talk to patients. But with time, everybody understood that this didn't, it wasn't instead of a dialogue with patients, but actually helped out. And it was just groundbreaking. You know, I would look to someone and say, so I see that you've been having pain for 12 years ever since you fell from a horse, and I see that you're worried and that you're sad and that you're upset, because we don't like to use the words angry, depressed, and anxious. And they would just tear up and say, finally, you know, a white coat, finally a doctor who knows what's going on with me. So we actually started. The first thing was to actually understand what are the complaints in a systematic way that can be captured, that everybody can know about it. And that caught the attention of the Department of Defense and the Veterans Health Administration at the time. And ever since, we've been working both with the military and the veteran health systems. And they've been very progressive in how to record and diagnose chronic pain, and I think that would be the first amazing treatment that's out there.
Interesting, very interesting. It's not something I really would have given wouldn't have given that much thought to, but I guess it, when you say it so simply, it just does nothing but make sense.
Well, I think that we tend to, and no pun intended here, you know, jump the gun, but we really try to go to the end of the conversation before starting it and create a real relationship of trust that's so important when you talk to someone about something so intimate and so hard like pain. I don't know if you know, but the average interruption in the world where doctors interrupt the patients, I think in Switzerland they were the most. It was about a minute and a half they let you talk without interrupting, and in England it's somewhere over a minute. Here in the United States, it's anywhere between 2 to 16 seconds, and I don't know what kind of story can you give someone in 2 seconds. So I think that by implementing a patient reported outcome system that is able to capture not only the medical determinants of health, but also the social determinants of health. In other words, to try to understand the environment of, you know, who is that person that I'm talking to? What is their story? Just like you asked me, Alex, please tell me, who are you? You cannot understand who is Alex before understanding where I came from and what chapters that I passed in my life that would cause me to think and talk the way I talk. So humanizing the conversation, contextualizing the conversation, allowing people to interact is an absolute opportunity to start to be the process of healing through empathy and understanding. And that is actually the first and foremost treatment that I would say comes into play. Afterwards, we can talk about the stuff that we do to patients.
Okay, I hear you. How does your work with? I know there's a lot of correlations, but you know, you've been very active in dealing with law enforcement issues surrounding addiction. What's been your experience with the history of that treatment, and where do you see it going in the future?
Yeah, I think that's an excellent question, and I'm glad you asked that, because I do want to highlight what makes what makes law enforcement personnel, military personnel, veterans, elite athletes that I work with in the NFL. What does that make them unique in that sense? And that is that as much as pain disrupts everybody's life, you know, I think the only patient that I sent to a psychiatrist because I thought they were crazy was someone who actually was happy that they had pain. But all the responses of grief, of sadness, of despair, of anxiety, of fear, of anger, of frustration, all these are normal manifestations of this abrupt change in the life story, especially if you're someone who is a high performer that has decided to dedicate their life to something greater than oneself. And I think that when I ask, and I was, you know, multiple times asked, even in Congress when I testified about the opioid epidemic and about healthcare in general, I always ask, what is the opposite of health? What is the opposite of health? So I'll ask you, what do you, I know you're supposed to interview me, but I'll ask you, just as a scientific question, what is the opposite of health? The opposite of health is?
Is illness or sickness?
Illness, disease, right? Disease, illness, sickness, right? And you answered like 99.9999% of everyone. And I will say that because of that, we are in this mess. Because of that, we have, because of that answer, we have not a healthcare system, but a disease management system. And so I would argue, just for a second, and bear with me, that the opposite of health is not illness or disease, that the opposite of health is isolation, is that through disease and illness, as we get sicker and sicker, our world becomes smaller and smaller, and it contracts until one day we wake up and we feel so alone, so alone, so that this world is so not worthy, that we take a Xanax, we take an OxyContin, and we drink a beer, and that's it. And so if you agree with me that the opposite of health is isolation, imaginary or not, it could be that we're surrounded by a lot of people, but we still feel that no one understands our true story. Nobody understands our suffering. Nobody can connect to what we're going through. You can use apps that connect you to your friends, to your family, games that you can play that allow you to immerse yourself in a different world, like with virtual reality or augmented reality or mixed or extended reality. It can connect yourself to purpose, to faith. It doesn't matter. You choose whatever you want the connection, but you need to be part of something. And this is why, going back to your question, what is so special about law enforcement personnel? Because we grew up in this fraternity, in this brethren glue that brings us together, where we're willing to sacrifice our life and to have each other's back, and that is ripped away from us because of the pain. And that is the true treatment. And so when I talk back in Congress about, so what do we need to do? I say, it doesn't matter. Whatever policies you decide, it doesn't matter unless it connects the person or the people or the community back into an active and social life. And that's why, by the way, complementary medicine, naturopathic medicine, acupuncture, yoga, tai chi, meditation, mindfulness, this is the reason why all these things are so helpful, because they facilitate our connectedness either inside to our thoughts, to our emotions, to our feelings, or outside to our close and intimate support system that we trust and that we care for, and brings us back to that life that we so deserve.
I feel what you're saying, I hear what you're saying, but I don't understand how, when we're talking about the addiction issues that are facing law enforcement, those are physical addictions. How do you address that?
Well, you know, embedded in your question is the assumption that the physical and the emotional or spiritual or cognitive are two separate things. And you're not the only one who thinks for it. You know, just think about it for a second, okay? Is we go to the doctor, right? And how are doctors classified? They're classified according to the organ they treat, right? So if something's wrong with your heart, you go to the cardiologist. If something's wrong with your intestine, you go to the gastroenterologist. If something's wrong with your lungs, you go to the pulmonologist. It's like, you know, you go to someone who takes care of that organ in the machine. Now, a neurologist, what do they take care of? They take care of the brain and the nervous system, right?
Right.
What does a psychiatrist do? What do they treat? Where do all our emotions and our thoughts and our ability to discern, where does that come from?
Our mind, our brain.
Yeah. But why is it that we separate and we say, oh, There's a doctor for the real stuff, which is a neurologist, and then there's the doctor for the who cares stuff. This is a 400-500 year old way of thinking that René Descartes, a French philosopher, brought and separated the mind and the body. But we know today, and we've known this for thousands of years in other cultures, how the mind actually influences the body and how the shape of our body influences the mind. And General Corelli, who is really one of the most prominent generals that have dedicated their career to eradicate a brain injury, traumatic brain injury and post-traumatic stress, he was the one that coined the term of the silent injuries. These are real injuries. So I do not accept the kind of, oh, there's a real thing because I have a broken arm, and what, it's not real because I had a concussion or post-concussive syndrome and I have post-traumatic stress. I have PTS and it's very real, and I wear it with a badge of honor. So the point is that for the personnel members that are suffering from addiction or from chaos or from impulse control difficulties, that find a challenge to reinsert themselves, of course that their disease is real and it is in the brain, but that also means that it has to be treated holistically, what we call bio, psycho, social, spiritual. And that's how all these things connect. And so when you only give pills, how could that help? If you only give car oil and you never put in gas or water, we never put in air in the tires, then at the end it'll go flat. And I'm glad you made that remark, because most of the people, they know inside that the mind and the body are one, but we are trained in our everyday life to think of it as something separate, as if our mind is a second degree citizen and we shouldn't really talk about it or talk about it with stigma. And the true treatment, the true revolution that we're going through now by people, the large, I would say, leaders in patient advocacy groups like in Fed Up or like Shatterproof, the Gary Mandel, is to say we need to talk, to take away stigma. Just like our previous drug czar, Michael Botticelli, who was a recovering alcoholic himself for decades. We need to pull out the stigma of the silent injury and treat it with medication, but also with all the other elements that are necessary.
I'm so thankful to hear exactly what you're saying, because one of the major issues that is facing the American law enforcement officer, and of course others as well, but that's the focus of my interest and this show, and is the failure by the government, by many states, workers' compensation organizations, police agencies, to even recognize post-traumatic stress as a real thing, as a real injury. And this is killing our cops.
Yeah, it's killing everyone. It's killing everyone. Listen, I don't have to tell you, the numbers are just staggering. By the time we'll finish this interview, there will be at least half a dozen who have died from an unintentional overdose. And this has been going on for over a decade. People are starting to pay attention now because the costs are becoming so staggering that it has cost until now $1 trillion, and it's projected to cost another $500 trillion in the next decade. So suddenly people are paying attention, because everybody to some extent is feeling this. And the stigma is not... this is not negligence. This is not mean-hearted. This is not malfeasance, although there are bad actors in the field. But this is just the simple human nature. You know, it's like my sergeant used to teach me. He said, the easiest pain to treat is the pain of other people. Just think about it. Is that when my wife complains of a toothache, I said, come on, honey, would you stop babying around? Stop complaining and moaning. But if my tooth hurts, oh, my God, I will rip the whole house to pieces and I will sell everything we have just to get rid of it. And so this is the trickery of the mind. And so therefore, we need to fortify the mind, the spirit, the power that we have within. That this is, by the way, the fuel of the law enforcement personnel, the military service members, elite athletes, like to think you and me. What is it? What is the driver that makes us want to succeed and overcome the most difficult challenges that are out there? It's the human spirit. It's the human mind. So some are attracted more to be part of a larger group, and they find solace in praying. In New York City, I can tell you praying won't take you a long place, but what will take you is meditation. But meditation, you can't meditate with all those noises. So you slap a virtual reality on you and you put your headphones on it, and oh my God, you are transported to something else. And so be it high tech, low tech, it is always high touch, high heart, high empathy. And it's just like I said to my 12-year-old, you know, bless her soul, I say to her, if you take the I out of illness and you replace it with we, what do you get? Wellness. And this is what Safe Call Now is so important. This is what you're doing is so important, is that we are creating the we in the wellness.
I like it. I like it. But, you know, one of the issues that I have a very difficult time dealing with is the lack of compassion and empathy shown by so many law enforcement agencies when it comes down to officers being truthful about facing the issues of post-traumatic stress. I mean, the numbers are staggering of cops who go to their bosses and they say, look, I'm having a problem with this, and they find themselves unemployed the next day instead of being treated like a human being.
Yeah, I agree. I agree that, and by no means do I pretend that this is easy. You know, if this would have been so easy, it would have been solved, and we wouldn't have had this conversation between us. I do, however, want to say that this is not a story, a Hollywood story of good guys, bad guys. This is more like a Greek tragedy. Either we all win or we all lose. And so I can sense a real shift that is going on right now in society, starting to grapple and understand the enormity of the opioid epidemic. And this is by no means trying to, take off the hook or absolve all those who are in positions of power who have not been and are not and still will continue not to be sensitive to the suffering of individuals. And maybe they will change once they see a family member, a friend, because there are also many who say, I used to be like this, but I have seen the light and I have changed. And one of the things that I wrote a couple of, I think it was a month and a half ago, I blogged on Medium a piece called The Opioid Epidemic Is Not About Opioids and It's Not an Epidemic. And then you could imagine that is so controversial. I think I got like 2,000 hits in one evening. And the next day I got an email from Medium saying, congratulations, Dr. Kahana, you're the top health blogger on Medium. And the point that I'm trying to make here, why is it not about opioids? You know, we are blind to the root causes of the opioid crisis. It's almost like, you know, the story of the six blind men who see an elephant and they ask, what is an elephant? And so the one who's tugging on the tail says it's a rope, and the one who's tugging on the trunk says, you know, it's a snake, and the one who's touching the tusk says it's a spear. So each one sees something different. So obviously, if you're a state prosecutor, you think one thing. If you're a regulator, you see another. If you are a payer, you see a third thing. If you're a healthcare professional, if you're a pharmacist, you know, everybody sees something else. And so at the end, we have to ask that it's the opioid epidemic is not just about opioids. And it's also not an epidemic. And what do I mean when I say it's not an epidemic? An epidemic is an outbreak of a disease that spreads quickly and affects many individuals at the same time. Now, the reason why I don't like the word epidemic is because it comes out of the word outbreak, like suddenly. And this is not suddenly. This has been going on since the late 80s, early 90s, and close to 500,000 people already perished from this epidemic.
Your viewpoints are fascinating. Things that what you brought up, I think, is food for thought for all of us. And I, as we run out of time here, I want to just let my listeners know that you are an advisor to safecallnow.org. If you or someone you love is facing issues of addiction as a first responder, reach out to us. We have a 24-hour hotline. Just go to safecallnow.org, and there is help available. Hopelessness is not something that you have to face alone. Dr. Ghana, thank you so much for being on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement.
Thank you very much.
To those men and women who are still active duty law enforcement, either as a law enforcement officer or in a support position, especially if you're a crime analyst, I don't know if you have heard of Analyst Notebook, but it's an amazing tool that's being used by police agencies all over this country, both large and small. It is an IBM product, but it's being sold and it's being supported by a pretty amazing company called Blue Light, Blue Light LLC. This is a company I had the owner on my show as a an interviewee on the radio, because he is a retired Sergeant Major Green Berets, and they used this product to roll up terrorist networks in Iraq and Afghanistan, and that's where this tool was beginning to be used, and then it was modified for law enforcement, and it does amazing stuff. I just got back from a conference in Denver where I interviewed people who have been using it, and I mean to tell you, if you are involved in any investigative process in law enforcement, you need to check this out. Go to bluelightllc.com. That's bluelightllc.com, and check for Analyst Notebook. It is amazing. The people at Blue Light are amazing, and you will not be sorry if you are in that capacity, because this will assist you in complex investigations, and it will also help your community. Check it out, bluelightllc.com. If you are an active duty law enforcement officer and you work extra jobs like many of us have to do, you're going to want to know about this company. It is an amazing company, and they're called Law Enforcement Specialists. Now, they're based out of Arizona, but they have a presence in most of the United States, and it's pretty unique. You know, we all have to face facts. That is, the police salaries basically suck, and you have to work extra jobs in order to either make ends meet or you want a few of the nicer things in life. Well, you know, sometimes you have to get them through your agency, but if you want to check with law enforcement specialists, there's a real good possibility that they can put you into extra duty assignments, and they work with your agency. It's wild. I've really never seen another company that does this. So check out their website. It's offdutypoliceofficers.com. Check that out again, offdutypoliceofficers.com. And you sign up with them, and they get you extra jobs. I mean, it doesn't get any better than that. Check them out. I know these people personally. They are great folks. They help law enforcement officers all over this country. They assist in charitable organizations, and they're just good people. Check them out at offdutypoliceofficers.com.
end of watch.
Each week on Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement, we pay our respects to the men and women of the profession who have made the ultimate sacrifice and given their lives in the line of duty. Unfortunately, this week I have three names to read. The first is Special Agent Jeremy Timothy Ensley, the United States Department of Homeland Security. Special Agent Tim Ensley died after contracting dengue fever while on temporary duty assignment to Indonesia in May of 2018. He was medically evacuated to Singapore, where his condition continued to worsen. He passed away as a result of complications on June 24th. He served with Homeland Security for 9 years, was assigned to the Seattle Field Office's Child Exploitation Investigations. He is survived by his wife, 4 children, and mother. Special Agent Jeremy Timothy Ensley, United States Department of Homeland Security. End of watch, June 24th, 2018. The second officer is Richard Lopez. Police Officer Richard Lopez of the New York City Police Department died as a result of the cancer that he developed following his assignment to the search and recovery efforts at the World Trade Center site following the 9/11 terrorist attacks. Officer Lopez was a U.S. Marine Corps veteran, had served with the New York City Police Department for 20 years. He is survived by his wife, daughter, and brother. Police Officer Richard Lopez, New York City Police Department. End of watch, June 24th, 2018. And the third officer to give his life in the line of duty this week, Police Officer Vu Guyen of the Cleveland Division of Police, Cleveland, Ohio. Police Officer Vu Guyen passed away 4 days after collapsing during a 1.5-mile timed run that was part of the agency's canine handler eligibility process. He and other candidates were participating in the physical fitness portion of the process in 90-degree-plus heat when he collapsed during the run. He was transported to Metro Health, where his condition continued to worsen. He was flown to Cleveland Clinic, where he passed away on July 6th. Officer Guyen had served with the Cleveland Division of Police for over 20 years and had previously served with the Cleveland Division of Corrections for 4 years. He survived by his wife and 2 children. Cleveland Division of Police, Police Officer Vu Guyen, end of watch, Friday, July 6th, 2018. These men all gave their lives for their communities. May they rest in peace. I want to thank you for listening in to this week's episode of Blue Lives Radio, the voice of American law enforcement on AmericaOutloud.com. I appreciate you once again for listening in to Blue Lives Radio. I'll see you again next week.